And before we even start, I'd just like to pray for us in our time together, and then we'll get started. Let's pray. Father, would the words that get spoken today be your words, not mine? And Father, would you, out of this time, bring some value and benefit to everyone here? Would your name be honored in everything we do? And we just thank you in advance for what you're going to do in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, I'm Skip. I have some friends and colleagues here, and I've already told them that this is what we're going to share today is super basic stuff. So if one of them stands up and says, well, that's not true, listen to them. They're really smart people, and they're probably right. So today, we're going to talk a little bit about teaching and encouraging early patient mobility to non-rehab professionals in mission hospitals. And what's that all about? Well, let me get through the preliminary stuff, and then we'll come down to why we're even doing this. And by the way, they tell me I'm kind of sort of supposed to stand here. That's not personally what I prefer, but I'm going to. And they have these fabulous lights that are totally in my eyes, so I can't see any of you, which is good news, because then if you fall asleep or you leave and go get coffee or something, I won't even know, so I won't be offended. So here's the deal. This is me. I'm Skip. You probably can't even read that. Undergrad at Penn State, you don't care about that. Duke for PT training, Pfeiffer University, hospital practice. I'm a hospital PT. And so for 52 years plus, my practice was hospital practice. I was the acute rehab services manager in our health system in Raleigh, North Carolina. We have actually three hospitals that are part of our system there. And so so I did that for about 30-plus years. But the real reason that I even can be here is because I hang out in a mission hospital in Bomet, Kenya, a 10-week mission hospital. I've been there about 12 different times. And so that kind of was the seed bed, so to speak, for this today. And so let me offer the standard disclaimer. I have not been able to figure out how to monetize this at all, and I'm not working very hard at that. So here's the goal. This is lengthy, but here's the deal. In mission hospitals around the world, sometimes there aren't rehab professionals at all. And in fact, in the last year or two, I was contacted by a doc in a little mission hospital in Africa saying, I would much rather have a PT come right now than another doc. And I don't know what was behind that, but the point is, in many hospitals, mission hospitals, rehab professionals either aren't there or they visit periodically, but there's not a consistent presence. And so this presentation is about early patient mobility and patients in hospitals, and then how visiting professionals, say you're a rehab professional, whether you're a PT, OT, speech pathologist, athletic trainer, whatever it might be, and you visit, you can play an important role in teaching other people there, nurses, caregivers of any sort, some things about patient mobility that will have some lasting value after you leave. And that's really what seeded this presentation, just that whole idea that if you show up for a week or two or a month, you're going to have great value for that time you're there. But what can you do that would have some lasting value when you go away and there's no one to replace you? And so the objectives, we're going to just talk about the importance of early mobility in hospitalized patients. We're going to talk about basic patient mobility considerations. When is it safe to move a patient? When is it not? And then just some basic mobility techniques. This will probably be the part where you Well, excuse me, I need to reattach. This is where you'll say, well, I do that every day personally when I get up in the morning. And so, fair enough, that's probably exactly the case. All right, so let's get going. Short-term value, or what value does short-term visitor bring to mission hospitals? And let me just share a few. This gets often understated. Just encouragement to that full-time missionary, doc, nurse, PA, whatever, who at times can succumb to the woe is me, I'm in the middle of nowhere, and does anybody even know I'm here besides God? And sometimes I don't feel even that his presence is there. And when you show up, just showing up brings tremendous value. Just here comes John from the U.S., and he knows I'm here. And I can't overstate how important that is. And that's feedback from missionary docs, especially over years. Thank you just for coming and letting me know that you know we're here. Here's another thing. Stuff you bring to the staff. Rehab stuff. If you're going to serve short-term in a mission hospital somewhere, connect before you come. They probably don't want or need expensive stuff, you know, high-class rehab stuff. It might be as simple as a roll of exercise band, or it's small but it's expensive thermoplastic splinting material, or anything like that, just rehab stuff. And again, not expensive stuff, not a $40,000 or $50,000 Cybex machine. You don't want to do that. Something you can pack in luggage that'll be valuable. Here's the other thing to think about. I put that up there because in rural Kenya, chocolate chips, at least in the past, have been almost non-existent. And when you show up in that remote mission hospital with chocolate chips, not only are they elated, but it will come back to you in the most amazing chocolate chip cookies you've probably ever had. So in the visitor's quarter at the mission hospital or wherever you're staying, somebody there is helping cook your meals, and they can do wonders with just a little package of chocolate chips. I put pepperoni up there. There's a missionary doc full-time at Tenwick Hospital, and he is an Italian kind of guy. And you can't get pepperoni easily in the area where he serves. And so just a few packs of pepperoni, and he's in hog heaven for and you know, you think pepperoni. I mean, I can go to the convenience store and buy pepperoni. Nope, not in rural Kenya. And so think about things like that. And if you're going to go, connect. Interesting, you say connect. How can I do that? I've not been all over the world. I can only talk a little bit about Africa. In Africa, two things have happened. Africa went directly from drums to cell phones. They did not mess with landlines. That just at all. And because internet service is becoming more robust, they don't do mail very much either. And so so just to know you can communicate, shoot somebody a note saying, hey, I'm coming, I'm going to be here for this period of time, what can I bring? And you'll find amazing stuff. Simple stuff. I was there a couple of years ago, and a young woman who has been serving in Nairobi and in other parts of Kenya said, I need some otoscope batteries. Simple little thing, but she couldn't get them easily where she was. Do you know how long it takes to get otoscope batteries? Well, if Amazon doesn't deliver them this afternoon, they'll be there tomorrow morning. And so, simple stuff. And then here's one that I finally figured out. I'm a slow learner, but finally figured out. Income for workers in the mission hospital, and visitors. But here's the deal. You might be staying in some sort of accommodation in the mission hospital. They may have visitors' quarters. They may have a little house they put you up in. If you hire a local person to clean your room and do your laundry, and you pay them the equivalent of $4 U.S., that is huge in their life. Now, many of you spent $4 plus this morning for a cup of Starbucks. I confess I did. In fact, at the airport in Raleigh, North Carolina, it was $8. They think highly of their Starbucks in the airport. And so $4 is nothing. But for them, it's a big deal. And so think about that as you go. And then, obviously important, what you provide, the care you provide for patients. And let me just make a diversion here. Sometimes we can minimize in our mind what that means. I had the privilege several years ago of caring for a young man. He was 18 or 19, a Muslim from the coast of Kenya who had Guillain-Barré syndrome. Serious stuff. He was essentially quadriplegic. And a Muslim. Abdi was his name. And every day when we came to see Abdi, he would ask, "Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this?" And it was a tremendous opportunity to say, "You know what, Abdi? God cares deeply about you. And there's this Jesus thing." Abdi eventually died. And whether Abdi came to know Christ personally, I don't know. But he heard every day, "God cares deeply about you." And when you bring that, that is amazing. And then as a part of that, evidencing God's love and the gospel to patients and to other folks, patients and their families. And there are ways, creative ways to do that. You guys probably know that better than I do. In Africa, there are two national languages, English and Swahili, and I don't know how many other languages, 40 bazillion, 44. I thought it was in the 40s. And so your patient in the bed who only speaks Maasai, somewhere in the building there's somebody else visiting who may be an English speaker but also speaks Maasai. And an opportunity to leverage that for the sake of the gospel. Okay, so what are the things that short-term mission do? But here's another. Value can you bring? Enhanced or upgraded skills for the rehab staff. Many of the staff, if they have rehab staff, are amazing folks. They're caring. They're just wonderful. Their training may not be the same as you had here in the U.S. And so, not arrogantly, but just carefully saying, you know what? Here's another way to do this that I also found useful. And again, carefully, not here's how to do this, but here's another way of how to do this. And you may have found it effective as well. Mary or John or whatever his name might be or her name might be may not have received that training or may have just learned how to do something differently. No worries. Just gently help them with some other things. New skills. There are lots of new things in the rehab world. Some of you are familiar with dry needling, which we never, and I hate to say never, we almost never would do in a hospital setting. It's just not the right tool for our hospital patients here in the U.S., and especially here in the U.S., where it seems like the goal is to get you out the door as fast as possible. In our part of the world, if you have a mid-shaft femur fracture, we stick a nail down there tonight and you're going home tomorrow. In a mission hospital in Kenya, I've seen a patient in traction, in bed, heal before the family could raise enough funds for the surgery and then to get him home. So it's just a different environment. So new skills for the rehab staff. And then emphasizing to staff in that mission hospital setting the importance of patient mobility, because it really matters. We're going to talk about that in a bit. And then you may help them with how to assess, facilitate, and promote patient mobility in those patients. There are still, in the world, cultures where, especially for older people, hospitals are where you go to rest and get well. And then when you're discharged, you can get moving again. And that's just kind of old school thinking about mobility, about being in a hospital. And so you can help people understand the value of patient mobility, early mobility, for hospitals' patients. So again, why to do this? Well, because there are many mission hospitals that don't have full-time rehab staff or rehab personnel. And then they may have people who come periodically, even infrequently, but not regularly. And then those intermittent volunteers provide great benefit while they're there. But, you know, they come for 2 weeks, they see a bazillion patient, and then they go away. And so that's what really brought this idea to fruition. How do we do something that will have lasting value for those patients that come long after you've gone? And so that's what this is really all about. And then without full-time staff, the only patients who ultimately benefit are the patients you see while you're there. And so we just, again, we're trying to think, what could we do as rehab professionals to help staff that are there all the time do something that's going to be valuable for subsequent patients long after you're gone? And then in the whole business of encouraging patient mobility, and we're going to get there in just a second. So why focus on patient mobility? Why not hand hygiene, which I strongly encourage? Why not other things? But let's talk about patient mobility. Multiple studies over decades indicate the value of mobility even in the sickest or most severely injured patients in hospitals. And so here's the deal. There was an early article, and early by that I mean 1899, 125 years ago, published in JAMA, and this Dr. Ries, and you can see what he says. It means a great deal to put on their own feet in a short time, rather than be confined to bed, having their weak backs and general debility increase rather than disappear after the operation that was meant to cure them. So this was a study, one study 125 years ago. They started to recognize the value of patient mobility. Here's another, and this one's particularly relevant because this was a literature review in the Journal of Clinical Nursing. When you see the detail, you'll know that it actually was published in the Journal of Clinical Nursing, but the study was done, or the review was done in Australia. That's why the spelling is as it is. I won't bore you with all the detail, but they reviewed dozens and dozens of studies. And regardless of gender, age, injury, or illness. Time and again, most inpatients would benefit from early mobility. And I like this study because in a mission hospital, other than a doc or a PA or a nurse practitioner or something, there will be nurses or people functioning in that role. And so this is their world. And when they looked at it, they said it really matters a lot. All right, so what is mobility to start with? Well, one definition, the ability to move or be moved freely and easily. Now, be moved can apply to those patients who are in a bed, they are comatose, they are not participating at all. But the bigger definition here, your ability to move purposefully as you go through your day. Foundation for living a healthy and independent life. Mobility compromises all the skills required for everyday living. Physical stamina, strength, balance, coordination, range of motion. And as you read that list, you can think, yeah, if you're in a hospital, laying in a bed, every one of those things gets impacted. Your endurance, your strength, balance, coordination, range of motion. Some of you, I don't think anyone in the room is probably as old as I am, but some of you experience that every morning when you first wake up. Gosh, did all my coordination and my strength go away overnight? Let me stand up and make sure I don't fall down. All right, so there are tools, you guys probably know this better than me, for assessing patient mobility. Before we even talk through them, let me tell you, I'm going to show them to you. I don't think they are particularly relevant in most mission hospital settings. They are available online. In the U.S., they sometimes get used, therapy departments use them to decide when it's appropriate to intervene with a patient or not. Insurance companies use them. And in fact, in the health system where I work, we used one of the tools and we had to really reassess every day, and it had to do more with reimbursement than anything else. So here's one, the BMAT, you're probably familiar with it, Bedside Mobility Assessment Tool. MPAC is the one that I'm probably most familiar with because that's the tool we used every single day to assess mobility. But there are others. Here is just a list of a few others. And this is what the BMAT looks like. You can't see it, nor do you need to. It is available online. And so if the remotest mission hospital has either satellite or other internet access, this is something nurses could use if they chose to, just to kind of take a look at the mobility status of a patient. This is the MPAC, and again, it's too hard to see. But just to know that it's out there, as shorthand, we call it six clicks. And again, every patient got a quick look at that here in the U.S. because of things that it impacts that may not be remotely true in a mission hospital in another part of the world. All right, and then there's some cognitive assessment tools because it's helpful to know a patient's cognitive status if you're going to be mobilizing them at all. And there are two, the RAS and the Glasgow Coma Scale. You're probably familiar with those. They're not important. Just be aware that cognitive status does impact safe mobility. Here's the RAS, the Richmond Agitation Sedation Scale. It goes from a -5 to a +4. In a perfect world, and if, at least in this room, we probably all are zeros. We've got a student in the room, so she might be a little a plus one because she's anxious, but maybe not. She has work to do. So, at any rate, just to know that they're out there. This is the RAS. Here's the Glasgow Coma Scale. You're probably aware of that. If you're a 3 on the Glasgow Coma Scale, you are barely alive. And if you're a 15, that should be probably most of us in the room. Although, as I get older, I wonder about my memory, but that's a whole different story. Maybe I'm only a 14. But anyway, just to know the fundamental principle that cognitive status impacts how you approach patient mobility. If a patient is totally comatose, that leads you to a different kind of mobility than if the patient's a walkie-talkie, came in with a distal radius fracture, but otherwise is doing great. All right, so important considerations, and this is really the heart of what I wanted to talk about. How do you know when it's safe to mobilize a patient, when it's not? And so here's some things. Number one, injury prevention for the staff. If you beat the drum about patient mobility, you need to get people up, you need to get them moving, and they get that, you know, 400-kilogram patient up and they get hurt, that will poison the well. And I don't know what it's like in situations you've been in. Where I've been, one person getting hurt, that gets communicated across the whole hospital system before you can move to the next room. It's just amazing how quickly that word flies. But the real point is, help people when they're mobilizing patients learn how to do it safely. If they get hurt, that can be a deal breaker. And so that's the whole business of adequate staff for the patient size, cognitive status, mobility status, all those things. Mr. Jones is a walkie-talkie, and he weighs 140 pounds. That's one thing. If he weighs 400 pounds and he's confused and disoriented and not moving about well, that's a whole different deal. And so be sensitive to the reality of injury prevention for the staff. And then here's another one. When you're getting ready to move patients, mobilize patients, tubes and lines. If the patient's lying safely in bed, got an IV running, got whatever, that's one thing. But think ahead. If I'm going to get the patient up, is there enough tube and line length to do that safely? There's nothing that will, well, there are probably things. One thing that will poison your relationship with a nurse is if you pull that line that she had a great deal of difficulty placing in the first place. So just be planning ahead up front. And then let's talk about ventilated patients. Here in the U.S., mobilizing ventilated patients is absolutely possible. We do it. If mobilization simply means elevating a head of a bed, letting the patient sit on the edge of the bed, most of our ventilated patients are also heavily sedated, so they don't fight the vent. And so, but even then, at least elevating the head of the bed or whatever is good. But here's the deal: if you're in a setting where there is not readily available reintubation resources, be very, very, very careful. Here in the U.S., in a major medical center, there's a good chance there's a respiratory care provider, there's a doc, there's somebody who's been trained in how to place an ET tube nearby. If you're in a remote area, and maybe there's one anesthesiologist or CRNA or someone who manages that, and they're in the OR, and you accidentally extubate a patient, it is a bad day. And so just think that through very carefully. The light in my eyes makes this hard to read as well. But it just, those resources may not be readily available. So think that through before you move ahead. How about patients with trachs? Not on vents, but with trachs. Same deal. There are people walking around with trachs all the time. But in the hospital setting, in a mission hospital setting, just be be aware that it's possible to dislocate or pull that trach, and that can be a bad deal if there's no one around to replace it. So think that through. If the patient is breathing well, it may not be a big deal, but it's certainly something to pay attention to. And then how about patients with chest tubes? Here in the U.S., we move patients with chest tubes all the time. We walk them up and down the hall. We do whatever, depending on other things in the patient's life. But if the patient is to suction, there are a couple of things here that we do in the U.S. You might just have 20 or 30 feet of suction tubing. If not, or you're going to take the patient, as we do with our post-op cardiac patients, for a stroll down the hall, portable suction. And it's, I think, pretty readily available here in the U.S. Every place I've been, it's readily available. I've never seen it in Africa. So that doesn't mean it's not there. I've just not seen it. And so if you're going to mobilize a patient who's on a chest tube to suction, a couple things you can do. If there is some extension suction tubing, great. If not, even simple things like standing, marching in place, or whatever can contribute to patient mobility within the confines of that chest tube to suction. What if the patient's to water seal? No big deal. Take the water seal with you. You can march the patient down the hall or whatever. But know for sure. And this makes the fundamental assumption that the chest tube is well placed and secured. And I would never assume that. I would just look first. In some mission hospitals, there's no one around who has the training or the skill to even place a chest tube. But again, if you encounter it, just know you absolutely can mobilize a patient with it, but just with those cautions. All right, how about some other things? What are lab considerations? Let me preface this, and we'll come to it again, by saying there is information out there. The American Physical Therapy Association puts out some information. I bet it's true in the OT world and in other rehab disciplines about lab values and when it's safe to mobilize the patient and when it's not. First of all, before we even talk about them, depending on where you are, it's good to know what the lab has the capacity to do. For instance, most labs can easily do an H&H. And so this is the information on hemoglobin. You kind of know these are basically the numbers for men and women. The lab in that mission hospital may have some different reference levels, but they won't be far off from this. And the same with hematocrit. There are the numbers for men. There are the numbers for women. But here's what I'm going to say to you next, if it'll come up. There we go. Oh, well, let's go back. Well, I'll get to it. All right, here we go. O2 sats, most places will have a pulse oximeter. There's some data out there that says 92% is fine. I don't personally like it. 94% I feel better about. That doesn't mean that 92% won't work, but I just personally don't like it. But here's the fundamental principle. Look at the patient. Duh. I have cared for especially some elderly women who had H&Hs of 9 and 27 or 28, and you know what? They were doing great. And we don't know what their history was, but I just bet that if we'd done an H&H the day they were admitted, that's where it would have been as well. But also be aware, in the U.S., it was an interesting experience for me personally. We, in the Mission Hospital in Kenya, had a patient come in desperately in need of blood. Staff gathered, all of us who gave blood could, and I think we ended up hanging 8 or 9 units to save the patient's life, and it worked. I came back to the U.S., went to work, and One of the first patients we saw, multiple gunshot wounds. They had used 100 units of blood product to stabilize this guy and save his life. 100 units. You won't find 100 units at Tenwick Mission Hospital today without mobilizing 75 of the staff. So all of that to say, look at the patient, but don't think that if the patient's H&H isn't great, you're going to be able to fix that. It's just hanging a unit of blood. Blood? Do we have blood today? So be aware that that can be an issue. Look at the patient. And then consider safety, falls risk prevention. We never want to mobilize a patient and put them on the floor. That is just a bad day for everybody. If you've been around healthcare for a while, you know we've kind of redefined what a fall is. I think the latest I've seen is the unanticipated transfer from one level to another. What does that mean? But, you know, we live in a different day than when I trained a lot of years ago. All right, and then some other things to consider. I'm going to have to look closely. Skin integrity. If you've got a patient and you want to get them sitting, they've got huge sacral to cube, hard to keep a dressing on it. Just be aware of that because that may impact how you mobilize that patient. Ulcers, we've already said, orthopedic injuries, that goes without saying. Somebody with a bilateral femur fracture, when does that ever happen? A lot in developing world where motorcycles are the preferred mode of transportation. So just be aware. You can still do some things with patients. Patients bilateral femur fractures can still sit at the edge of the bed. You shouldn't be walking them unless things are stable. I apologize, these are small print here. Good body mechanics. Good body mechanics for you or whoever is mobilizing the patient. And so when you're encouraging staff in the Mission Hospital to mobilize patients, give them some guidance on how to do that safely. Good body mechanics and simple things. Work close to the body. You know that already. Good back posture, shoulder position, base of support. And let me talk about that for just a second. Here in the U.S., I've seen it a lot more in Mission Hospital, the floor is often wet. If it's not urine that dripped out of a unsecured bag, it is just floor cleaner they use regularly to control infection. And so where I've hung out, it's rare that the floor is not at least a little bit wet. So, and wet in a good way, it keeps infection down, but it's certainly a little bit hazardous if you're moving an unstable patient. I think I already said that urine or floors that are frequently washed. And then consider not only patient safety. Falls prevention, again, is a big, big deal. Here in the U.S. especially, but it's a big deal anywhere because we don't want patients to fall and get hurt. All right, and then let's move on. So here's some other important considerations. And I apologize again, the screen is a little bit small. I think we've got all of that. Yeah, okay, so here's the mobility progression. And let's talk about this just briefly. You guys pretty much do this every day. So this is not rocket science or even good medical science. Recognize, this is what you do every day. So let's start. Elevating the head of the bed. Patient's comatose. They are on a vent. You're not going to be getting them up and walking them in the halls, but elevate the head of the bed, especially if they have good head control. And if they don't have good head control, control their head. And elevate the head of the bed so that at least they get the benefit of that semi-erect posture. Long sitting in bed, head of bed raised or independent, but if they have adequate hamstring flexibility. I'm not sure how much long sitting I could do personally. Maybe some, but not a ton. All right? And then, good head and trunk control. And be really aware of that. If it's a ventilated patient, can they sit? Long sit in the bed, sure, if you give them some support. But they're probably sedated. They may not have good head control. And back to that same principle, only if you think the ET tube is secure and you're not going to extubate the patient. All right. And then sitting at the edge of the bed, if they can long sit, then they sit at the edge of the bed. Same things again. They've got to have good head control. They've got to have good trunk control. They can sit supported or unsupported. Again, as I said, this is what you do every day. You don't even think about it. You're asleep. You wake up. You sit up at the edge of the bed. You jump out of bed. Unless you're a fire person, and in our community, I did a little research. I don't think we have one fire station in Raleigh, North Carolina, where you have to slide down the pole. I think they're all now one story, so you just run out to the truck. The whole pole thing is a thing of the past. And then good blood pressure control, no orthostasis, and absolutely be aware of that. This is the same principle that applied with lab values and other things. Look at the patient. Some of you sitting here may have a pressure of 107/60 and you're doing fine. I don't know how that works, but just be aware of what the patient norm is and don't be scared by just numbers. Look at the patient. And then once they're sitting at the edge of the bed, feet on the floor, rocking back and forth, for some minimal weight bearing. After that, again, good head and trunk control is important. No signs of orthostasis. And then stand them at the edge of the bed. When I stand people at the edge of the bed to start with, you definitely want to, whether that standing is supported or unsupported, and you want to have a good landing zone if you're not sure how the patient's going to do. And tell people that. Don't get crazy about mobility until you know how the patient's doing. If they stand at the edge of the bed and they start to collapse, they collapse on the bed. Probably in the U.S. that would be called an unanticipated transfer from one surface, but at least nobody gets hurt. Maybe. All right, and then single stance versus bilateral stance. And you do that when you get up in the morning. You go to walk to the bathroom, single stance, walk to the bathroom. And then all of this at bedside. And then forward and backward, if you're not sure how well the patient is going to do, teach people just step forward, step backward. That's the start of gait, but at least it gives people an idea, am I going to be safe and stable or not? And then if it's a patient with a weak extremity, maybe post-stroke, post-whatever, just a stand, pivot, transfer to the chair. Immobile, single lower extremities or for whatever reason. And then stepping, and then ambulation. And I put in here not dragulation. I think just because you guys laughed, you know what that is. Don't put that in a note that the patient walked 30 feet when you drug them 30 feet. Okay? With an assistive device, without an assistive device. And stay close to the edge of bed. Again, a good landing zone until you know that stability is assured. Gait belts. A gait belt is a simple tool. When you go to a mission hospital, they're not super expensive. They're way more expensive than I think they should be, but they're not super expensive. Stick one or two or four in your suitcase. That's something that'll be really helpful. If not, no worries. A rolled up sheet, a rolled up gown, whatever, just to give you something to hang on to the patient with, or more importantly, that nurse or whoever's going to actually be mobilizing the patient. So that's the deal. And we've got a time for questions. Let me tell you the other thing that's coming up. This is So just so you'll be prepared with your phone, this year at GMHC, to give session feedback, we're just using a QR code. And so we'll come back to it in a minute, but just so you can be prepared, if you've got your phone with you. But any questions just about this whole business? Oh, hold on. We are someone way more important than I has got some information for us.
No, you have 10 minutes.
Huh?
You have 10 minutes.
10 minutes? Oh, we won't need 10 minutes. Yeah, we won't need 10 minutes. Because I don't know answers, so if you have hard questions, we'll just dispense them. Any thoughts or questions before we go? Yes, sir.
Did you do much teaching of family members?
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that. Absolutely. And especially if compromised patients are going to go home. Now, they're probably not going to go home on a vent. We've got that covered. But if mom had a stroke, and so we still want her to be getting up, and it's easier to let her lie in bed, but it's not good for her. And so teaching family members how to safely let the patient sit, transfer into a chair. Now, in some cultures where there's an extensive family, they'll just want to get mom into the chair. You know, the four boys will get together and they'll put mom in the chair. Help them understand that it's to mom's benefit if she's able to help. It doesn't serve her well if you do everything for her. And that's a hard thing for some families because culturally they think the more we do, mom raised us and oh my gosh, we want to do everything for mom. Just let them know and give them some instruction on how to do it safely. And that's, again, the key. If somebody gets hurt, that kind of takes things off the table, at least for a while. Yeah, we tried to get mom up, but my back is killing me. So we're not going to get mom up. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have any pictures on transferring patients like that you can give?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Do you have any pictures on the right ways to transfer?
I don't have them with me, but great question. They are so readily available on the internet that MedBridge is a subscription service that has tons of that information. Now, here's the deal. If you want to leave something with a Mission Hospital that's valuable, besides all the other stuff, and you have the funds to do it, a subscription to MedBridge that is available in a million different languages, not a million different languages, but many, is a great tool. You can leave them. And then online, they can get transfer techniques and pictures like you've just described. All of that kind of stuff is out there. Handouts for patient families, if the hospital has the resources, a computer, a printer, and of all things, paper. At Tenwick Mission Hospital, they've got great computer resources, but finding a piece of paper is a huge challenge. And even greater, and I didn't put this on the list, if you bring that staff a pen, it's like gold. So I've gone to Walmart and bought a bazillion pens for pocket change, and I bring them, and then I come back 6 months later, and they're all gone. Okay, what else? Well, listen, thank you guys. I know this was basic stuff. You already knew all this stuff, but thank you for coming anyway. Here is the QR code. If you would give feedback, that is hugely helpful to GMHC. If next year they say, Skip, you did this presentation, but forget it because nobody loved it, that's important. And so please give good feedback because that helps position next GMHC. Thank you guys for coming, and I hope the rest of GMHC is amazing for you. Well,